Welcome back to Even More News, the first and only news podcast. I, the person speaking, is named Katie Stoll.
I wasn't speaking.
But you is named
Cody Johnston.
Woo woo, got through that.
Wow, wow.
Going great. Hey guys.
Hi.
I want to wish you all a very happy National Cheeseburger Day.
All right.
Yum, yum, yum. I encourage you to go out there and celebrate with plant-based options.
I was going to say, all right, yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, I mean, I'm not opposed to people having the occasional burger, if that's the way you swing, but we could eat less burgers. We could eat more veggie burgers.
Yeah, eat what you want, but...
within reason.
Sure. But also, like, no one's the boss of you.
No one is the boss of you. This is America. You can eat apples and bananas.
Yeah, but also...
and burgers.
Do cheeseburgers really need a day? They're very popular.
Need a day? They are popular. I don't think that cheeseburger sales are waning, despite what, like, conservatives would want you to believe, that we're coming for your burgers.
But well, we're coming for the cow farts.
We're coming for the cow farts. Those, mm-hmm. That shit's toxic.
Yeah, yeah. It's dangerous.
Bad.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Bad, bad, bad. Guys, a little bit of news. If you follow us on Twitter, you might have seen that the trailer for our new show, Worst Year Ever, with Robert Evans of Behind the Bastards, has officially launched.
That's true.
It's
the trailer has launched.
Trailer is a weird word for it. It's like a 10-minute episode.
Yeah, we just got together and we talked briefly.
We talked. We made predictions for what crazy thing we'll see happen next year. Made each other laugh. We premiered the theme song that Cody's been working on and wrote.
It's true. I did.
We all chimed in.
Yep.
And sang along, and it's very fun.
We got some folks to do the sing-along part.
We're really hoping that someday we'll have a live show and we can perform it for you guys live.
Oh, that's definitely going to happen.
That's definitely going to happen.
I'm going to bring my mandolin wherever we go.
Wherever we go.
I'm going to be covered in lanyards and a mandolin.
That's the goal.
Mm-hmm.
Well, lanyards from all the crazy places we're going. Like,
yeah.
You know, QAnon conventions.
CPAC.
CPAC gun shows.
Yeah,
I think
you know, some
Robert
cult
wants
conventions.
To hit up a furry convention, which I'm down for.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I think you should do all that kind of stuff. So check that out on your ear holes. Wherever you get your ear information from.
Yeah, the first two episodes actually will be released next week. We only intended to record one episode, but we had too much to talk about.
Yeah, we just kept going.
So we recorded two long episodes.
Yeah, we'll figure it out. It'll be a process because we were like, well, this is what the episode's going to be about. And we got together and we just kept talking and talking and talking. And we had all this information and you can't cut it necessarily.
Well,
so
you could, but we didn't want to.
We didn't want to. So we just, now it's two and they're going to come out the same day. So it's technically one, but pace yourself, you know?
All right. Well, we're just going to get started because last week we promised you that we would discuss last week's Dem debates.
Promises, promises.
And promises is a promise is a promise mm-hmm. is a promise. So we're going to do that right
yeah.
now without Robert this time because he's busy and we couldn't take up more of his time. But what were your thoughts? What were your standouts, Cody?
My thoughts were pretty standard.
Kind of par for the course for all of these debates.
Yeah. I watched it and you know, we all had our little tweets and our little comments and our reactions
that
to
is
it.
That is a fun part of it, but that is always so distracting. Like, how do you balance tweeting with watching
a
program? Because you also want to see what people are saying, and then all of a sudden I'm like, wait, what did that person
right you kind
proclaim.
Of you want to make your point. You're also reading other people's reactions to it, or like fact checks even, like, oh, actually they said this and this isn't true and so on and so forth. So it's it's a process.
I was very grateful one night of it. I was grateful to finally see Warren and Biden on the same stage, although, you know, people are like, oh, Warren didn't go for Biden like we all thought. She held her own. I know I'm a bit of a broken record on Warren, but every time I see her on any kind of a stage, but especially up against other candidates, I'm just blown away by how good she is in this setting, at how good she is at not just answering the question. She almost always answers the question, but giving specifics, you know, like giving really
explaining why
details.
She's a teacher.
She's a teacher, and she mentioned that. You know, like, for example, what pops to mind is when she's talking about unions and saying, like, yeah, we're going to sit down and, you know, and trade. And this was during the questions about China and trade wars and all that. Like, sitting down with the union leaders and really working out policies and figuring out what people need. And, you know, maybe that's an obvious, but, like, yes, I love that. Give me specifics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. She's very good at giving specifics. She and Bernie both got less time this time around, it seemed, despite being two of the three front runners. Yeah. Biden got, I think, the most time, which is, I think, a double-edged sword because it presents...
Gives him more time to hang himself.
Right. Gives him more time to sort of talk and ramble and not really say much and then say stuff where you're like, Oh, Joe, why are you still?
Hey, Joe.
It's wild, actually. Just seeing all the, pretty standard debate. People had good moments. Castro really went after Biden a little bit.
He sure did.
But like the I'm more interested in the reaction of people to the debate, seeing what the media does and like just a lot of think pieces on like Biden had a great night
and
stuff like that.
I wanted to bring that up as well. Not just think pieces, but even as it was happening, people being like, wow, Biden seems sharp tonight. Wow, Biden really holding his own. What debate were you watching?
It's baffling.
Because I truly do not get it.
Well, it's not baffling.
Are they responding to the media saying that he's doing a good job? It's just because, for example, we're talking about immigration. He failed. He failed to answer that question. He failed to acknowledge. I mean, like, if someone's questioning him on what happened with immigration and what we did to kids in cages under Obama, and Biden straight up says, well, I was vice president, and then backtracks a minute later saying, like, well, I was behind Obama every step of the way. You still haven't answered the question. Mm-hmm. Squirming up there.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, losing his cool.
He's riding the Obama train, but also distancing himself from it whenever it's convenient for him.
It's wild to me.
And just like... the way that he speaks, it isn't great. And like, I don't think it's ageist listen to him talk. It's not. It's to listen to him talk. It seems like it's a problem. Well, like that can't be overstated. I don't think that like
tweeted this. Was it Chase Mitchell or something? It's like watching Biden speak is kind of like watching your uncle or your old uncle or drunk uncle, whatever phrasing he did was funny, try to give a toast at Christmas and you're like, oh, you're gonna make it through.
Yeah, well, it's all that it's that Grandpa Simpson meandering, like, I tied an onion to my belt story. Give me 5 B's for a quarter, you'd say. Like, it's sort of rambling and then you're like, well, why did you even bring this up? Like, what's his train of thought doing? And then even just sort of struggling to say words a lot. And that's not great. And to just sort of see the reaction, like, oh, Biden's doing great and he had a great night. It's this sort of manufactured, like, oh, yeah, the media says that he's great. Therefore, people will think that he is.
Yeah, it's very frustrating. Another thing that I found frustrating, a lot of people did this, but especially Kamala did this. We'll be in the middle of having a debate about Medicare for All. And Kamala will be like, you guys are spending all this time talking about Medicare for All, but we haven't spent any time talking about Donald Trump.
Ugh.
And it's like, Kamala, this isn't the time. Everybody here doesn't like Donald Trump.
Right.
We do not need to derail a very important conversation to talk about what that man did. That is for the general. That is when we have our nominee and we need to be making the case to people why they should choose our nominee over
Donald
Trump.
It's also not even that, because even during the general, like, I hope that whoever is the candidate doesn't do that.
I understand.
You know?
I mean, I just think
I know
that,
you do.
Makes,
I'm just,
that makes much more sense to me. Like, you have to be making the case during the general as to why Donald Trump is an unfit president.
Sure.
And I'd certainly hope that we don't waste too much time doing that, though, of course, that is going to happen.
Yeah, they will. The DNC is terrible at their job.
So frustrating. But for now, we've got 10 people up on stage or whatever the number is at this point, and we have 3 hours to hear what they have to say. And people are still very confused about what Medicare for All, you know, like healthcare for all of it, what the different policies even mean.
Medicare for all who want it, Medicare for some, Medicare for all who ask, Medicare for et cetera. Like, they just keep replacing that word, all.
And something that I don't see being done very effectively, and you might disagree with me on this, is explaining Medicare for all and why Medicare for all only really works if you don't have private insurance as an option. You know what I mean? Like, I see people debating it in ways that are like somewhat confusing, but it doesn't come down to the brass tacks of why they can't coexist, why they're like, they're at odds with each other. Do you know what I mean? Like, and maybe everybody listening doesn't agree with me, but I feel like there still is a lot of confusion out there. And this is a perfect opportunity for someone to say it in a simple way, like right. Get some like really strong statements out there. Do you know what I'm saying?
I do know what you're saying. I think that part of that is that more time is given to people who reject the idea of Medicare for all.
Yeah, that might be
than,
true.
Than the people who support it. Of which there are only a couple. So I think that the fact that they keep giving these people time of like, why is Medicare for some better? Why is Medicare for all who need it? Like, whatever their version of that is, they're given a lot of time to sort of obfuscate the issue a little bit, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're not really given much time to Bernie, to a lesser extent, Elizabeth Warren, to explain like, no, here's why we all need it. I think something that speaks to that is that they keep asking, they keep doing this, and hammering it home of won't taxes be raised?
Right.
When the cost will go down for everybody, and that's the point. And they keep hammering home, like, what about taxes?
But the
like,
cost won't go down if people keep their private insurance.
Yeah, private insurance will not help the cause for Medicare for all. Also, like, just there's also this question that keeps being asked of, like, what if people like their insurance?
Right.
And I don't know. Does anybody like it?
I loved when Elizabeth Warren said that. I love my doctor. I know people that love their doctors, but I don't know anybody that loves their insurance.
Right. That's the thing. You have insurance so you can go to your doctor. It's about the care that you get, not the insurance company that allows you to do that.
Right.
So if you have Medicare for all that allows you to go to the doctor and you like your doctor, then you'll go to your doctor.
And your life will be better.
Just a lot of the framing of it, I think, makes the problem that you have with the communication easier to obfuscate. Like they're actively trying to make it a little more complicated so that they can't discuss it.
Yeah. And I mean, it's just so, and then you see stuff that's happening this week where Whole Foods, because of Amazon or whatever, you know, is cutting their health insurance for benefits for their employees. You know, what if you really love that health insurance?
Oh, yeah, well.
That reliable health insurance.
Well, then you get Medicare for people who need it. And like it's just this framing of like, well, if you have your insurance that you like and you like it, okay, but what if you lose your job? Well, then you go on Medicare for all. Why don't we just all go on Medicare for all? Like, what are you doing?
Because it'll make my insurance worse. No, it won't.
It's just this sort of illusion of choice that we've had, and
it'll make. You'll still have choice. You still get to choose your goddamn doctor.
Speaking of, though, of Joe Biden not answering the question, shout out to Elizabeth Warren for at the beginning of the debate. Bernie was asked a question and he answered it. And then Joe said he didn't answer the question. And you can hear Elizabeth Warren go, yes, he did.
Gosh, I love her.
Yeah, it's great.
I love her. I love that woman.
You do. You
don't
do love
ruin
her.
It for me by telling me all the things I shouldn't love about her. I'm just kidding. You can.
Believe me, we will do an episode about her. And
we are.
And you'll find
definitely.
All about it. You'll
I mean,
find out
I'll
all about
be
it.
Doing that episode.
Yeah, I'll send you
maybe
links.
I'm too biased to do that episode. We're talking about For Worst Year Ever, by the way. And Julian, I'm always pleasantly surprised by him, by Castro. I think he's articulate and passionate, and I like him a lot. I mean, I don't want him to be the candidate. But I've said it before, say it again, I'd love to have him get a cabinet position of some sort.
Yeah, he's great.
And Cory Booker, you know what? Again, not my guy, but I have been pleased with his performance in these debates.
I also have thought that he's not been terrible in the debates. I would say, yeah, he's done a good job. He's still perpetually too corny for my taste.
100%. He's inauthentic.
Yeah. And that's kind of what I mean by that.
Yeah.
But he's done a decent job in the debates, especially compared to a lot of the other candidates, I think.
Yeah.
Like Kamala.
Like folks, Kamala, for know? Example. Kamala, stay in the Senate.
Mm. Beto, run for Senate.
Beto, run for Senate. Yeah, let's get him off. Also, I could have done with a lot less of everybody taking the time to say, I really appreciate Beto.
And, yeah.
You know, I was like, all right, stop this.
Right, I would have loved.
Are you guys trying to get him elected? What's the deal here?
Well, it's that necessary, like, got to show respect for X and Y. And just, like, yeah. I would have loved if, kind of related to Beto, I would have loved if someone at the debate stage kind of called that out, but still showed respect of, like, hey, instead of taking more time from, like, talking about the issues, why don't we all just sort of give Beto a round of applause real quick for what he did and all agree that he did a great job and we're showing him respect.
Now
let's all do it.
Way.
And then we're done and then we can move on. In the same way of, like, this is similar to Beto's really natural use of swearing and cursing.
He's just fucking great.
He goes at it. And just, like, these random, like, adding the word shit. Just like, if they say that's good, shit, that's not enough. It's really inauthentic, and it's...
It's because you see a specific time when he pivoted. That one time it slipped out, it worked well for him, and then now that's his whole thing.
Well, but the thing is that he doesn't understand, which is really frustrating, is that people didn't react to that moment because he swore. He said a bad word.
Right.
It was the attitude, and it was what he was reacting to.
Yes.
If he had said... I mean, members of the press, what are you doing?
Yes.
That would have had the same kind of reaction.
Yes.
Like, the swearing kind of helped probably because it was natural. But what he did and why he was saying it was what people appreciated.
Yep.
Looking at the press and going, what are you even doing?
It just turns out that the swearing is a distraction from the message.
Right. You know? And right. And so, like, now everything he says, he's got to slip in these swear words. Like, oh, they liked that. No. We liked what you said and why you said it. Not that you chose this specific swear word. And it's just that sort of, like, misunderstanding. And it's related, I think, to the debate thing where it's like, let's just all agree, Beto, good job.
Yeah.
And not do, like, the thing that you expect. Mm-hmm. Just like, because I think people would have really reacted to that well. Was like, no, people are tired of this thing. So point out the thing people are tired of and react to it authentically. And then we can praise you for that and move on. And you can sell t-shirts that say the word on it or whatever he's doing now. He sells too many t-shirts with the swearing that he says.
And one last important point to discuss regarding the debate before we move on is Joe Biden's teeth. You know, they don't fit in his face. They don't match him. They're young looking teeth. They look like 19-year-old teeth.
Well, there's a reason.
Because he stole them from a 19-year-old
boy. He stole them from Corn Pop.
Stone from Corn Pop.
After that fight.
Oh, my goodness.
We don't need to talk about
Corn Pop. I said bop, but I meant pop. If you haven't seen this Corn Pop story, you need to Google it. It's about, well, we're going to get into it on the other show, but it's a story, an anecdote from Biden's youth when he was a lifeguard. And
it's delightful.
Got into it in an altercation almost.
This
with
like
a gang member
at a pool.
It involves a knife and...
And a chain.
And a chain.
It's going to wrap around his head.
Unbelievable.
It's a great story. It's very funny. It's, again, one of those things like you're meandering a lot. Also, why are you telling this story?
Yeah.
And
for street cred.
For street cred, yeah. But anyway,
he's wearing Corn Pop's teeth.
He's wearing Corn Pop's teeth. And also his eye is trying to escape his face.
Certainly is.
It's aside from all just everything about it. It's like this idea that people have. We kind of covered it on the Some More News episode. But like this idea that like, Biden's the guy that can take on Donald Trump. He's the guy. First of all, anyone can do it if they know what they're doing and know how and have like good policies and so on. But watch Joe Biden's debate performance. And aside from the fact that Donald Trump probably won't participate in debates.
Oh, God, that's so upsetting.
But if he does, then you have this like look at Joe Biden's performance and imagine him debating Donald Trump.
Yeah.
It would not go well.
It would be awful.
He has a lot of trouble, and they both do. Donald Trump has trouble speaking, and he makes up phrases, and he also is not doing so great. But Joe Biden has trouble forming thoughts, and he's very repetitive. He, like, clearly has these, like, stock answers that have been burned into his brain for decades, and he goes back and he misspeaks all the time. He gets very flustered when he's challenged, and that's not great. Because I don't know if you've seen Donald Trump interact with people in debates.
He's frustrating.
He's very frustrating to speak to. And if you get visibly frustrated by that and your every part of your face tries to escape your face during every single debate so far, that's not
a
good sign. And then you, also the fact that just like you're going to have Donald Trump saying, oh, you're losing your mind. And also you grab women, and then Biden's like, but you also do those things. And it's just the same kind of person arguing with each other for months. It's going to be terrible. I don't get the appeal at all.
Guys, tell your parents.
Tell your parents. Oh, my
gosh.
Spread
the word. Because they're not listening to this podcast.
They're not. Also,
they don't know how to listen to podcasts.
That's ageist.
Parents don't.
Oh, well, there you go. Most of his supporter seniors.
Yeah.
Vote. They vote.
We got to move on. This has been fun.
We get to move on.
Because we're coming up on the year anniversary of the confirmation of Brett Kavanaugh and Christine Blasey Ford's Senate testimony. And I'll be gosh dang darn if Bert isn't in the news again, guys. On Sunday, New York Times reporters Robin Pogrebin probably said that pretty close to right.
I think it's perfect.
And with confidence.
Yep.
And Kate Kelly released an essay in the opinion section that was essentially an excerpt from their upcoming book, The Education of Brett Kavanaugh, An Investigation. The book is an exploration of Kavanaugh during his time at Yale, looking at his like social circles, talking to his peers and teachers, and apparently trying to figure out what kind of guy this was and if he could sexually assault women. And it turns out, according to them, that he could. Quote, ultimately, we combined our notebooks with our common sense and came to believe an utterly human narrative that Ford and Ramirez were mistreated by Kavanaugh when he was a teenager, and that Kavanaugh, over the next 35 years, became a better person. Interesting conclusion.
Good for him. We all want to become better people.
So I just want to talk about this a little bit, because last year we heard a lot about Christine Blasey Ford's experiences with Bart. But we never learned too much about Deborah Ramirez, who claimed that Kavanaugh thrust his penis into her hands at a party because nobody took her seriously and the FBI failed to investigate it. You know, at the time, the Senate concluded that Ms. Ramirez's account lacked corroboration. This is despite Ramirez's lawyers giving the FBI a list of at least 25 people who may have had corroborating evidence, and that the Bureau interviewed absolutely none of them. And apparently a lot of these witnesses tried to reach out personally and they wouldn't even.
Yeah, I mean, even like a year ago when this is happening, or almost a year ago, there are a lot of people who were like, I reached out to the FBI and they didn't respond. I thought I had information and like names of people they should interview and they didn't respond.
Yeah, it's crazy. And you know, and according to this book, this is actually backed up by classmates who remember it happening at the time. And I think we knew this time last year, but it wasn't talked about very much. But I guess at least 7 people have a strong recollection of hearing about the alleged incident with Ramirez long before Kavanaugh was even a federal judge. Apparently, a lot of people literally described it as the talk of the campus at the time. Mm-hmm. That seems like something that is true. You know, like in some way or another.
But I thought that if it happened, it would have been the talk of the campus, and it wasn't.
But it was.
But why did he say that it wasn't?
Because he's a liar.
Oh.
That's my own extrapolation.
I mean, he did lie several times during the thing.
Exactly. So there's that. In this essay and the book also included a previously unreported claim that friends pushed Kavanaugh's penis into the hands of another female Yale student during a dorm party.
Yeah, just guys being dudes.
Just guys being guys. And during the author's investigation, they learned that a classmate, Max Steer, witnessed the event and later reported it to senators and the FBI, who, you guessed it, didn't investigate. It's just so frustrating. And now we're seeing a whole relitigation of everything that happened online. And that's why I wanted to talk about it, because it's just very, very frustrating. Ben Shapiro made a baffling video saying
that's completely understandable, actually. If you've heard him speak before on any topic, this is completely not surprising.
Saying, no one has described Kavanaugh's genitals yet. What?
It's true.
Yes, no one has described Kavanaugh's genitals yet.
That is true. No one has. I wanted to briefly talk about this because I think it's really telling. And something we've sort of talked about before, this idea that a lot of people like him and like conservatives will often say like, well, those are the rules that you made, so now you have to live by them. And it's usually in regards to something where they're completely misinterpreting and misrepresenting what, quote, the rules right. are, where they don't understand whether it's willing or not to really like understand the situation of what X is. And like, well, if that was X, then this is Y. And I think this genitalia thing is similar in that we know that Donald Trump, the president, and Stormy Daniels had a relationship of some kind. They had relations. And during all that mess, we read descriptions of his penis. And that is partly to like prove, yeah, like I've seen it. We had these relations, but also it was a consensual relationship, and over time it wasn't like right. you know, so there's this situation that we know happened, and Ben knows it happened, and so he is now taking that and being like, well, if you're saying that, then why isn't it in this situation?
Yeah, like a sexual assault victim is going to remember. Like, make
traditionally, you're not paying attention to that.
Of that. Yeah, that's not the thing that they're doing. They're trying to escape. They're struggling. They're panicking.
Yeah. Also, much genitalia is similar to other genitalia.
Yeah, how do you describe it? It was normal.
Right. Unless it's like Jeffrey Epstein's genitalia, unless I believe it's egg-shaped.
Unless it's egg-shaped. Unless it's, you know, got a strange curve to it. I don't know.
But in general, if you're being sexually assaulted,
no shade on egg-shaped penises or curves.
No shade on any sort of dick shape. I'm just
bodies are beautiful.
Okay, but if you're being sexually assaulted, that's not in your mind. That's not what you're thinking of at all. It's actually kind of ghoulish to assume that if you're being raped at a party by Brett Kavanaugh, you would recognize or make note of what his penis looks like.
Yeah.
And I do think that this has a lot to do with the fact that, well, Stormy described the penis, and this is the same thing, and it's not the same thing, actually. And I think this is just a good example of that sort of like yeah. misunderstanding of X and applying it to Y because it helps your team.
Yeah. Before we move on, I want to just talk briefly about the New York Times mishandling of this as well.
Yeah,
briefly.
Yeah, good.
Well, first thing I'll say is that when they originally shared it, the New York Times tweeted the piece with the caption, "Having a penis thrust in your face at a drunken dorm party may seem like harmless fun, but when Brett Kavanaugh did it to her, Deborah Ramirez says it confirmed that she didn't belong at Yale in the first place." What? You know?
What? Harmless fun?
It doesn't seem like harmless fun. It seems scary. It seems traumatizing.
It's super not normal and harmless or fun for that to happen
Don't
to you.
Don't normalize that. Don't phrase it like that.
There were some people who chimed in like, this happened to me all the time in college and it was fine.
Well, I'm sorry for you.
Well, yeah, exactly. Also, probably lie. One person actually did tweet and then tagged one of their old roommates and like, that never happened. What are you talking about?
I love that.
But also, so a lot of people responded to this New York Times tweet. I just responded to whatless what. They deleted the tweet.
Yeah, they did. Because you responded with what?
I mean, a lot of people responded.
I know.
And in their follow-up tweet, like, we deleted a poorly phrased tweet, and they explained and so on and so forth. But it's not poorly phrased. The idea behind it was bad.
Exactly.
So there's no like good way to phrase getting a strange dick shoved in your face is fun and normal. There's no like better way to phrase that. It's not that it was poorly phrased. It was the and they ended up deleting that one as well.
Yeah.
Following it up.
Just stepping on rakes.
Yeah.
The other thing that was problematic and that has given a lot of fuel to people that want to shoot down this mm-hmm. reporting is that the essay, and I don't know, maybe the book too, did not include the admission that there were people that said, no, I don't believe that this happened.
Yeah, I don't remember this. I don't think it happened, so on and so forth.
And that should be included, I would say. Like,
yeah, oh yeah.
You know, it's like, yeah, if you're trying to be fair about this, then include that. To me, that doesn't change the fact that other people do remember it. That doesn't negate it. But what does tarnish the overall piece is not including all the information that we need to have.
Exactly, yeah.
And it's irresponsible and honestly a baffling misstep that is very frustrating because yeah, you want this to be taken seriously.
It's why people don't trust
the New York Times.
New York Times and the media in general.
Yeah.
It's to, you know, maybe this is fake news, maybe. Maybe it's fake news. I don't
maybe,
know.
But it's not.
It's not fake news. But it's the idea, it creates this idea and this atmosphere where like, well, the New York Times really messed that up, therefore everything they say is wrong. Especially this other information in this article, because they didn't include that, and they should have.
So now most of the Democratic presidential candidates have called for Burt's impeachment, except for Joe, who's calling for more of an investigation, perhaps leading to an impeachment, which is just, oof, yummy when you think about what he did to Anita Hill. During Clarence Thomas's confirmation hearings. You know, we've covered that. We don't need to talk about Biden anymore.
Oh, thank goodness.
Thank goodness. You guys know where we stand on that. However, it does not seem likely that impeachment proceedings will begin because apparently they're busy with Trump impeachment proceedings, come on, give me a break. Mm. That's all very frustrating. Seems like a good time to pause for a break. What do you think?
I agree with you completely.
Thank you. Don't go away, guys. We'll be right back with even more news.
Wow. We talk a lot about the importance of mental health on this podcast, and we know not everyone has easy access to it, or in some cases, any access. So here, now, in this advertisement, we're going to talk about BetterHelp. But first, a different person's voice.
Mine. Me. Mine. My voice. My turn to talk now. If there is something on your mind, something getting in the way of you achieving your goals or happiness or getting out of bed or getting in bed or, I mean, just like so many things, then BetterHelp online counseling might be able to help. BetterHelp connects you with professional counselors in safe, private, confidential online environments. So you don't even have to get out of bed if you don't want to. The thing, you know, that you're going to be getting counseling for.
What if a person hates talking on the phone?
Well, then a person can do video chats or phone sessions or texts or, you know, just chat. And if your counselor sucks, well, that's fine. You can easily get a new one from the 3,000 U.S. licensed therapists.
And I can't stress enough how helpful basic counseling is and how much better our society would be in general if everyone got it, despite not knowing how much they could benefit from it. BetterHelp counselors are specialized in depression, stress, anxiety, relationships, sleeping, trauma, anger, family conflicts, LGBTQ issues, grief, self-esteem. We are all human beings. We all have problems, and getting help for those problems is equally human.
Also, BetterHelp is affordable. Financial aid is available for those who qualify, and right now, Even More News listeners get 10% off your first month with discount code EVENMORE. Get started today, and you can be talking to
or texting.
Yes, or texting someone within 24 hours by going to betterhelp.com/evenmore and filling out a simple questionnaire so they can help you find a suitable counselor.
That's betterhelp.com/evenmore.
We're both really excited about this, and I sincerely hope that if you're struggling, you take advantage of this opportunity and check it out. And we're back for, you guessed it, Even More News.
Wow.
I was trying something different. Did it work?
It worked. It worked great.
Cool. Let's talk about Saudi Arabia.
Oh.
Yeah, cool.
Huh? Okay.
Because there was a drone strike in Saudi Arabia, and now the United States is blaming Iran for it.
Whoa, wait. So we can do war.
We can do wars at them.
Okay, cool.
Last week, the Saudi state oil company, Saudi Aramco, had two key refineries bombed by drone strikes. I guess a source close to the issue said that up to 5 billion barrels of oil per day have been affected, which is about half of Saudi's production and 5% of the world's oil market. The Houthis, a group of Shia rebels in Yemen who have been in a war with other Yemenis and Saudis for almost 5 years, immediately took responsibility for the act. They even specified that 10 drones had been used in the strike, which lends credibility to their claim. But what if they're lying?
What if the government...
Mm-hmm. The United States government,
the Pentagon, and a lot of people who had previously lied to get us into a war with Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
What if they make other claims that could lead to war with a country that they've been wanting to go to war with?
We don't even need John Bolton.
What if it's like the same kinds of people saying the same kinds of things.
Yeah, what if it's that?
Poor John Bolton, by the way.
Yeah.
I mean, he's there and he really wants to. And then like 2 days after he leaves.
Baby, if only you'd hung in there for just a few more days.
Oh, he's probably just in bed.
Talking like this.
Cradling his mustache and his arms and just softly stroking it. Oh, yeah.
He peels it off. And
you need to moisturize under your lip and stuff, too.
He's cradling it in his palm of his hand.
Mm-hmm. Like a little caterpillar.
Anyway, all of that. President of the United States Donald J. Trump decided to blame Iran for the drone strikes. Quote, Saudi Arabia oil supply was attacked. There is reason to believe that we know the culprit, are locked and loaded, depending on verification, but are waiting to hear from the kingdom as to who they believe was the cause of this attack and under what terms we should proceed. Yes, wait to hear from the kingdom who they want to blame.
Yeah.
Who are their enemies they want to pin this on, other than the people that already admitted to it and have a reason, not a reason, but, you know.
Yeah, what if we wait? Well, because in the Constitution it says that the authority to declare war is held in the hands of the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia.
Yes. In our Constitution.
Yeah.
Everybody knows that.
Everybody knows that. It's interesting that there's more evidence of their murder of a Washington Post journalist than there is of Iran doing this.
By the way, the Saudi government just sold the building that he was murdered in.
What?
Yeah, that came out today.
Unreal.
Anywho.
Oh, my gosh.
And then today, just today, Trump tweeted, I have just instructed the Secretary of Treasury to substantially increase sanctions on the country of Iran. Very cool.
Yeah, it's really cool. I like, again, how all the same sort of people are sort of leading us into this conflict that so many other people have been warning about and talking about.
Yeah.
Despite the president's insistence that he doesn't want to do it.
He sure seems like he does.
Sure seems
do
like
it.
He kind of does.
And prior to this, there had been discussion of going back to the table to do another round of diplomatic talks after, the president blew up the Iran nuclear deal.
Mm.
And Iranian President Hassan Rouhani is still receptive to that idea. However, the Ayatollah flatly refused to do that now after the U.S. is, accused Iran of the attack, because, of course, they are refusing. Our president's pretty offensive asshole.
Of course.
And other reasons, too. But, just blew that right up.
I also find it interesting, the Saudis' view of the attack, according to sources, they likened it to their 9/11.
Okay.
Which, A,
nobody died.
Nobody died. It was their oil. Nobody died. And also, their 9/11 was our 9/11 because they were involved in 9/11. Also, later, after that was said, 2 days later, another Saudi spokesman said the attack was unquestionably sponsored by Iran.
Okay.
Which, again, it's kind of like 9/11. It's kind of like,
so
really,
kinda
it's kind of like a little similar to 9/11.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Interesting also that this is all happening and being pointed out a week after the president was going to meet with the Taliban, who the president thinks did 9/11.
It's just...
He tweeted, years ago, he tweeted that they did 9/11.
I know. And now he's best buds with the...
Saudi Arabia, who also threatened Canada with another 9/11 on Twitter.
It's just sometimes you have to step back and be like, I mean, not sometimes, every day. How is this the world that we live in? How is this our
clown show? I will say, there, and we've sort of touched on this maybe a year or so ago, but there's this resistance to Donald Trump and everything he does because everyone hates his attitude and his personality and his rudeness. Not necessarily his policies, but how he acts. So there's this sort of reflexive reaction against things that he does and says. Mm-hmm. We saw this a lot when he first became the president, of people being like, I can't believe he did this. And then someone would be like, well, actually, Obama did that. And actually, all presidents do that. And it's good that people learn, this is a president thing. And now we know that maybe presidents are bad and maybe we shouldn't have presidents in general, or certainly shouldn't expand their powers to the point where once you get to the guy that you don't like, then you're really mad about the stuff the presidents do. But I've been sort of hoping for this same reaction to any inkling of war. Right. Because I don't know, I think war is bad. And I think we're seeing that a little bit. We're yeah. like, if this were somebody else, I don't think that this reaction would be the same.
Yeah.
Which is a bummer.
Yeah, it is.
That if anyone else was like, oh, we got attacked. Like, you know, everyone in the media would be. And I'm pretty sure that there are tons of people in the media, especially like the mainstream or the corporate media, who would be in support of this no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
But if it were a different president, they definitely would be. Yeah. And there would be more people who are like kind of, you know, wishy-washy about it. A lot of people in Congress would be a little wishy-washy about it. But now we're getting tweets from like senators literally just tweeting no war with Iran. And that's their tweet. Although I would say I would prefer if they just tweeted no war.
No war, period. Full stop.
Period. That's the end of that. So like there is still some like couching this opinion in other language yeah. to make it seem like conditional and things like that. Situational. But I, in a way, I think it's... like, it's good that people have that reaction to things that he does specifically.
And I hope that
because
they keep paying attention in the same way that they pay attention to this man right now.
Right. And remember it.
And remember it.
Regardless of who's the president next.
Yes.
Knowing that, like, oh, remember that thing I hated because he did it?
Yep.
This is the same thing and I'm okay with it.
Yep.
Ask yourself why.
All right. It's time to move on to the news dump. Don't make a sound.
Toilet sound effect.
Speaking of Trump, I guess, transitions.
The news, Trump.
Apparently, at last month's G7 summit, Trump asked, quote, where's my favorite dictator? Referencing Egyptian President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi, and this is according to the Wall Street Journal, quote, several people who were in the room at the time said they heard the question, the journal reported. The witnesses said they believe the president made the comment jokingly, but said his question was met with a stunned silence. Later on, Trump said, quote, we understood each other very well. He's a very tough man, I'll tell you that. But he's also a good man. He's done a fantastic job in Egypt. Not easy. Just for some context, since coming to power in a 2013 coup, the Egyptian leader has been accused of suppressing and detaining dissidents and torturing, killing people, prisoners. You know, he's been flagged by human rights monitoring organizations. This isn't somebody you joke about. And you're not joking. It's not a funny joke, and it isn't a joke. He is your favorite dictator.
Yeah, it's not a joke, and he knows what he's saying and doing.
My favorite dictator sounds like a podcast.
It does sound like a podcast. I mean, it's basically
show coming here, guys.
Stay tuned. Basically just like, an alternate title for Behind the Bastards.
It is. But we'll have some episode called My Favorite Dictator.
But like saying it was my favorite dictator, and then saying, but he's also done some really good things. That means that you think dictators are good.
Yep.
That's a window, one of the many, many windows into his soul. But also like this, like, oh, he's not joking. He's joking. Oh, this isn't surprising. For years, he has promoted torture. He's promoted killing the families of terrorists. He's promoted all of these sort of extreme strongman dictatorial acts mm-hmm. that one would expect from the people that he praises. So joke or not, it's, you know that phrase, there's truth in comedy?
That's where we're getting at.
Like
I do know that phrase.
Yeah, you do. And I think that someone like Donald Trump, who has no filter, will say that kind of stuff. Because again, pro-torture, pro-killing people's families of terrorists, pro...
Censoring media,
All the stuff. He's the guy who tried to sue somebody over a joke
yep.
years ago. He's also the guy who openly called for the resignation of the New York Times editors like 2 days ago.
And historically, like
also,
he does
yeah.
this all the time.
So it's not surprising. It's just like, oh yeah, well, there's he is doing it again. He's our guy.
Update on Operation Varsity Blues. Felicity Huffman has been sentenced to 14 days in prison and 250 hours community service. She needs to turn herself in on October 25th. I just want to talk about this real quick. This has brought up a lot of people talking online about how galling it is to see this privileged, wealthy white woman. She gets a sentence that's obviously incredibly light. And whereas people of color, you know, there are stories of women, black women who have done similar things like that.
I mean, there's a woman who got five years in jail for getting her daughter into a better school system.
Because she was homeless. She was homeless. And so she, obviously it's bullshit. But also, and I've heard this point being made as well, and I liked it, so I wanted to bring it up.
Mm.
I'm not going to take credit for having thought of it by myself, but I've seen you guys talking about it. Is this the way we deal with this? Our prisons are very overcrowded, and it's expensive to have inmates. And, like, yes, this disparity, neither, like, that woman shouldn't be in jail for 5 years. Felicity Huffman's very rich. She should be paying a hefty fine, you know, like going toward and all this stuff. Like, I don't
community
know.
Service, all is kind of
community
stuff,
service. Yeah, all this stuff. Is this the right way to deal with this kind of a crime? And that's what I am bringing up to you guys.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, I mean, I think we're a very punitive society.
Absolutely.
And if we're talking about prison reform and in some cases abolishing prisons.
Sure.
I don't know. Maybe prisons are bad and not helping, and it's getting worse and worse and worse.
Slow down, there, Cody.
Okay. But if we're talking about that, then when someone very privileged gets a sentence, is the right reaction to say they should have a much longer sentence because this person, or is it to say everybody should have, you know?
Yeah.
So I understand that point. I think it's just a lot of It's again, it's a symptom of the frustration and the rage I think a lot of people feel when you're shouting about all these problems and nothing's being done, and then you see somebody sort of get away with something.
Yeah.
And
I understand that. That's incredibly frustrating, but let's just take a real...
Let's abolish prisons is what you're saying.
Yeah, let everyone just be.
There you go.
And in a bit of positive news, the non-binary pronoun they has been added to the Merriam-Webster dictionary. The new dictionary entry, listed as the fourth definition of the word they, says the word is used to refer to a single person whose gender identity is non-binary. I mean, I could have used for it to be a little higher up there, but I understand.
Sure.
I think that's very positive. That's great. The dictionary uses this example of the word in a sentence. Quote, I knew certain things about the person I was interviewing. They had adopted their gender-neutral name a few years ago when they began to consciously identify as non-binary. That is, neither male nor female. They were in their late 20s working as an event planner applying to graduate school. I'm including that just to point out how easy it is with a little bit, you know, just presence of mind, how easy it is to honor and respect people's preferred pronoun usage. You know, a lot of people are like, that's impossible. It's really not. You just have to think about what you're saying for a second. And then once you get used to it, you know what I mean?
But what if this is the destruction of language and the West as we know it?
I would say that's a bullshit response.
But what if
language
it
evolves?
Interesting.
We add words to the dictionary all the time.
Oh, so you're saying that language
in
evolves.
In fact, 533 words were added to the dictionary this month, including colorism, inclusive. I don't know why inclusive wasn't in there.
Probably new definition.
I should double check that. And deep state.
Hell yeah.
I don't have a sentence using deep state, but I really wish.
Oh, you can find them. Oh, yeah, that's tasty.
I want to find the Merriam-Webster's dictionary sentence of deep state.
Yeah, the deep state is out to get me. The dictionary.
Deep state is out to get me. The deep state is real.
Yeah. The deep state is out to get Merriam-Webster's dictionary.
Donald Trump is the only one who can defeat the deep state.
Yeah.
Those are all just Merriam-Webster's, if you're listening, those are just some like suggestions that you can use
for
that sentence. Just throwing it out there, but very good.
It's cool.
Job on being inclusive.
And it's also like natural. There's a, speaking of our favorite boy, Ben Shapiro, he had a rant today about this happening. And
of course he did.
He's very upset because of, quote, woke scolds. Because they is a made up definition of a word that has never been used this way in all of human history.
Okay.
And I'm sorry, but first of all, citation needed, Benjamin. That's just not true. It's been used since like what, the 14th century. William Shakespeare used it. William Shakespeare actually invented lots of words, Ben. So maybe, as Katie pointed out, language evolves based off of our needs to
Thanks
communicate.
For pointing out that I pointed it out. That was very.
Inclusive.
Inclusive.
This new word, inclusive. And it's just nonsense. It's this kind of overly pedantic and also like overtly ignorant.
Absolutely.
In order to sort of like push a little bit of bigotry and a little bit of exclusiveness.
Yeah.
And
Ben,
also,
Ben, you're dumb.
Also, here's a quote from Ben Shapiro. If we had that is not the standard of a prosecutor. Prosecutors exist to determine whether someone committed a chargeable offense, not whether they are exonerated of charges. So maybe it's a natural way to speak when you're referring to somebody. If you're not sure of their gender or if it's very easy, one would call it natural. And this is just like example 9,572 of this. But I think it's a good example of something good and also something that people use sort of weaponized to like push their like light bigotry. One thing we won't discuss too much, but Trump administration is going to rescind California's authority to regulate greenhouse gas emissions from automobiles. It's not good. A lot of these regulations have solved the smog problem.
I mean, in LA, you couldn't. Somebody said this in the debate the other night, but my mom grew up in LA. They had smog days.
Yeah.
You couldn't go outside. People wore masks.
Yes.
It was bad. And now it's beautiful. Mostly.
Yes. But like it's a very clear thing that helped. In the same way that we literally healed the ozone layer. Mm-hmm. Remember when that was a problem and then we did some things about it and now it's not.
Mm-hmm.
So there are these things that can be done. I think this is related a little bit to the they thing, just because it's another example of, well, so like Republicans allegedly are for states' rights. That's their whole thing.
To say.
And I've seen people like make this point, like, I thought Republicans were for states' rights. No, they never were.
Right.
It's an excuse for their soft bigotry or in some cases hard bigotry. It's an excuse to allow certain types of bigotry in states that choose to do it. That goes to the wind as soon as it's something like this.
Yeah.
And I just think those are slightly related, and I wanted to mention it.
Thank you. Also, you slip-slided one more piece of news in.
It's a little bit of news in that news dump. Interesting use of words, slide into the news dump.
You know, I'm an interesting use of words person. Gross.
Cool. Yeah, well, you said it.
Cool. Way to end it on that foul note.
No problem.
We're out of here, guys. We've shared all the things.
What? All of them?
So much more, but we're out
more.
Of time. But one last thing real quick. I want you guys to know that we love you very much.
That's true.